back, friends. James Corbett here from CorbettReport.com. So welcome back to the program. You are, of course, tuned into Corbett Report Radio, and I am James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Tonight we've been going over some headlines, but now we're here for food, health, and environment information, joined once again by James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, and for tonight's purposes, FoodWorldOrder.com. So please go to FoodWorldOrder.com for all of the latest news and information on food, health, and environment issues. James, thank you for joining us once again.
Hey, once again, I always appreciate it, man.
Well, we always appreciate it because you always have very interesting stories. And again, as we went over last week, this is just one of the most important issues we could be dealing with right now. So what stories have you got up for us tonight?
The first thing I want to hit, and this was something I, you know, James, I don't recall if you and I discussed this or not, but I, you know, as the week goes by, I collect news that I put in my bookmark folders and things that I collect that I haven't maybe posted to Media Monarchy or any of the appropriate sites. But I had seen in the newspaper, so I made sure to bookmark the URL last week about this upcoming sort of food aid to North Korea in exchange for discussions about lessening their nuclear ambitions. So I saw that and I kind of thought that was important. And wouldn't you know it, 48 hours after I'd seen that, Kim Jong-il is dead. So I grabbed from the Associated Press, and this is posted on foodworldorder.com, U.S. food aid for North Korea would bring nuclear talks a step closer. The United States was poised to announce a significant donation of food aid to North Korea this week before the nation announced the death of Supreme Leader Kim Jong-il. The donation, which will now be delayed, would be the first concrete accomplishment after months of behind-the-scenes diplomatic contacts between the two wartime enemies. An agreement by North Korea to suspend its controversial uranium enrichment program would have likely followed within days. A broad outline of the agreement made known to the Associated Press, ... But I find that really interesting, and this article does go on, of course, to discuss the widespread poverty and almost famine of this, you know, reclusive state. What's your take on this, James?
Well, this is an extremely interesting story because it brings up the issue of food and food aid and what it's really about and the political machinations behind it, which is something that I talked about on the podcast a couple of years ago in an episode called Food as a Weapon, which has a lot of documentation about this subject, so I hope people will go and look at that. But just looking at something much more recent, in March of 2011 on AlJazeera.com, there was an article, Food for Thought in North Korea. The subhead is, Officials in Seoul Face a Choice, Whether or Not to Use Starvation as a Weapon to Bring Down the Regime to Its North. Basically talking about whether South Korea should start withholding food aid in order to basically starve North Korea into submission. So once again, food is a weapon on the grand chessboard. It's been used that way for a long time. And unfortunately, Kim Jong-il was content to see his people starve to death rather than do anything to open up to the international community. But it just goes to show how these heartless people at the top will use starvation as a weapon to get what they want on the political chessboard.
And we can, of course, even see it in you know, dystopic, you know, predictive programming pieces like Soylent Green, which I find I reference a lot. It seems to kind of be one of those perfect, you know, dystopian things that really does describe what seems to be a part of the agenda. But do you want to switch to good news?
Let's do it.
at least for a short while. Posted up just a few short hours ago to grist.org. And again, I catch things from, you know, mainstream alternative media, all sorts of things. Of course, you know, linking doesn't equal endorsement because I see lots of things on Grist that I know fall in line with just the, you know, foundation funded climate control eugenics agenda. But we take good and bad information everywhere we can get it. But they have a post on the good food news of 2011, and they warn that the bad food news of 2011 post will be coming soon. But top of their list, urban farming is flourishing, and they cite and link to stories throughout the year coming out of Michigan, Tennessee, Chicago, San Diego, San Francisco, Oakland, Baltimore, more and more urban farming. And that, James, in a way, what we discussed so much last week, getting back to the land, maybe this almost in a way says, well, let's get the land back to us, or, you know, one way or the other, if we can't get back to the land, we'll create it right here where we can in our compact, soylent, green-like cities.
That's it. Occupy the vacant lots. Occupy whatever you can to do something to grow our own food, which is really the source of all independence. If we don't have that, we don't have anything, really.
So the list is 10, and I'll just blast through the remaining 9, and you can pick through and pick up anything there that sounds interesting to you. Number 2, young farmers make noise. Local food isn't just delicious and eco-friendly. It, of course, builds local economies. Food Day making a comeback and realizing, number 5, that we don't need industrial agriculture to feed the world. Number 6, despite the influence of the ultra-consolidated meat industry, the ag gag bills went nowhere this year in Florida, New York, Iowa, and Minnesota. Number 7, eaters are a little more aware of the people behind their food. Number 8, food access got more attention about, essentially, so many people around the U.S. lacking the easy access to good, healthy food. Number 9, more information helps eaters make better choices. And number 10, as you just said there, James, the Occupy movement adds fuel to the fire. Anything in there you want to pick through or mention?
I think they're all important in their own ways, and I'm just glad that there is a growing awareness of this subject, which I really think there is. So we've obviously seen this meme rising in the last few years about Victory Gardens or Bush Gardens or Obama Gardens or whatever people are calling them right now. It doesn't matter. As long as they're doing it, I think that's the point. And once again, this is an active process, and it is a process. It's not something that's going to happen overnight, but we can gradually start to be more concerned about where our food is coming from and how we can build communities based around that rather than relying on these giant warehouses to ship these foods from foreign countries to get to our doorstep, which is just not a way that will ever promote independence from the system.
And I think in this past year, when we look at some of the bigger, you know, outbreaks and recall stories, there was one that now I'm just bringing up off the top of my head. I'll have to bring up the specifics of it. But in this past year, a story that when it initially broke, an outbreak was blamed on organics. And then it, of course, turned out that it just came from some factory food location. That, whether we're talking about that or talking about just this very day, there's a story kind of going and growing about Walmart pulling a baby formula, a baby powder that's caused, I believe, 5 infant deaths, that we always see these kind of outbreaks coming from the very sources of the problems that, again, James, you and I know kind of fall into that same, you know, problem, reaction, solution situation. Well, whether you're talking about terrorism, you can still kind of create the problem within the food system in order to generate the reaction so that you can offer your pre-made solution. Just again, like last week, we mentioned Dennis Kucinich talking about, you know, guarding ourselves against manufactured food crises.
Exactly right. We've seen it happen before, and that is always one of their favorite trajectories. So we have to be aware that a lot of these problems that arise in these big corporate manufacturing food processing industries are designed to go after the little man who is just trying to sell something at a farmer's market. It's not about really reforming the food industry itself. So people have to be aware of that type of thing and really, really guard those liberties jealously, because unfortunately we've seen them coming after those liberties in case after case, in raw milk and all of the other things that the government is trying to intervene itself and wedge itself in between people and the food supply. And control of the food is control of the nation. So we have to be aware of that.
So you mentioned essentially the food industrial complex, and I have a post that comes from a site called SeekingAlpha.com, which is basically, I think, just an amateur, you know, sort of economic blog. But they had a post about food and beverage companies that hedge fund managers love, and they note that food and beverage companies tend to be a somewhat safe bet. Many people will continue to buy their favorite soda or snack food no matter how tight money gets. This fact tends to translate into a beta that's around a half, give or take, meaning the companies in this industry tend to be roughly half as volatile as the market. And again, more sort of market speak. But what they're essentially saying is these are a good, safe bet. And they mention seven companies in particular that the hedge funders love to fund. And it's exactly what you'd expect. Coca-Cola, Kraft, Pepsi, Campbell's, Dean Foods, Sara Lee, and Constellation Brands. And I've discussed on my show before, and again, I work at a grocery store here in Portland, Oregon, and see even so many of the alternative brands that I know full well have been gobbled up by Kraft and Smucker's. So you'll be looking at these sort of, you know, what essentially are, yeah, I mean, hands down, they're better made and have better ingredients. But there are companies that have been gobbled up by the multinationals, and you're looking at these choices thinking you're still making a choice about getting something independent, but it's still going back to, you know, these guys.
Yeah, and that reminds me of the Max Kaiser idea, because a lot of people might look cynically at that and say, well, there's, you know, they might be destroying us, but we can at least make some money on it and, you know, store for ourselves for the future or whatever, so that maybe we should fund, you know, these companies or get into the stocks. But Max Kaiser had the exact opposite idea. He has this boycott Coke idea that he's been trying to get going for years now, where basically he's saying it's a company that if we really could affect a big boycott of them in a big way, we could not only bring them down, but we could make tons of money bringing them down by being those types of, you know, vulture speculators who do that type of thing, attack companies all the time in order to bring them down, in order to profit off of the carcass as it starts to rot. And so he's had that idea at Karma Bank for a long time. I had him on the program to talk about it a couple of years ago. And I think there are things that are wrong about that idea, but there are things that are right. I mean, as long as we're going to bring it down, well, why not, you know, make some money off of it and show the companies that we do have the control, because we do. All we have to do is stop drinking their toxic garbage, and we can truly not only affect change, but actually enrich ourselves while doing it. So I like that idea in a lot of ways. And it's just the exact opposite of that type of let's just make money off of their profit mentality.
I had forgotten about that, but yeah, you're right. I do recall that. And again, wasn't it the same thing essentially with the sort of attack on silver?
Yeah, right. Pretty much. Yeah, he had the idea to short silver and bring down J.P. Morgan. That's it. Didn't really work in the long run, but it certainly got a lot of people into silver, which isn't a bad thing, because silver is a good long-term investment, and they can knock it down $5 here, $10 there, but it's going up in the long term. So again, I think these ideas are healthy, even if they don't ultimately work, and I think they will if enough people get a hold of them, but at least they get people into the game and really thinking about how we can effectively use our power to attack these corporate Borg entities that have taken over and infested our governments and our lives in so many ways.
So as long as we're cracking open the soda here, there's a story actually today from Natural News. Flame retardant chemical found in U.S. soft drinks. A substance patented as a flame retardant and banned as a food ingredient throughout Europe and in Japan is present in 10% of all U.S. soft drinks in the U.S., and it is BVO, brominated vegetable oil. And even the Coca-Cola ingredients page listed as, quote, stabilizers to prevent the citrus flavoring oils from floating to the surface in beverages. Just as flame retardants slow down the chemical reactions which can cause fires. This reminds me, you know, we've got rocket fuel in our drinking water, and I'll be covering a story on my own show tomorrow about these deaths in Louisiana due to neti pots, which are nasal cleaning devices. Two people have died from a brain-eating amoeba. And, of course, they're blaming it on improper use of neti pots, but it shows what is in the water, and it's a disturbing story.
Very disturbing, and that doesn't even include the things that we know they are deliberately putting into the water in full public view, like fluoride, which anyone who's studied into that issue knows is a complete toxic poison that's being put into the water supply on purpose, and that's a whole story in and of itself. But on that note of strange ingredients, I was just watching a clip from Letterman of all places the other night on YouTube, and there was that British cook, Jamie Oliver, is it? He was on as a guest, and he was talking about an ingredient in vanilla ice cream that most people don't know about, which is beaver anal gland. It's somehow an ingredient in vanilla ice cream. So, you know, you don't really know what you're eating when you don't make it yourself, do you?
Good grief. Jamie Oliver, I do know of. I've never actually watched any of the show, but he has a reality show on TV, and I believe it may be called The Food Revolution. But the first season of the show took place in my home state of West Virginia, in a town I think that had been, you know, listed as one of the most, you know, obese or unhealthy towns in the country.
I will refrain from making a West Virginia joke.
Thanks.
It makes itself. No, I'm joking. But I'm proud to say I don't actually know much about Jamie Oliver either. I don't really follow much corporate media at all, but I do know of him and the work that he's been doing, which from what little I know, at least seems somewhat admirable, trying to get healthier school lunches and things. It's not something I would disagree with on its face, but I don't really know the details.
And to maybe finish off all our soda talk and to stay on top of Coca-Cola, which again, actually, to go back to the article about the flame retardant, and they mention, you know, Mountain Dew and some of the other things, but they also mention Fanta Orange, which is, as we know, owned by Coca-Cola. But that opens up the whole, you know, box about the Coca-Cola Corporation and the Nazis. And I give a link back in that article to an article from Edwin Black discussing, you know, the connection between, you know, IBM and the Holocaust and Coca-Cola and Bayer and all the other corporations. But finally, a post again on foodworldorder.com from the Eatocracy blog, how Coca-Cola shaped the modern day Santa. Where did the iconic Santa Claus imagery we have all come to know, red suit, pleasantly plump, flowing white beard, rosy cheeks, come from? Turns out Coca-Cola's advertising program was more than a little helper in the modern interpretation of Saint Nick. And what follows, they have basically an interview with a guy named Phil Mooney, Coca-Cola Company's vice president for heritage communication. Basically, they don't not only feed you poison, but they've distorted even our public kind of consciousness.
Yes, they have. They've infested it in every way with all of their corporate propaganda. And on that note, we'll take a short breather and we'll be back with the closing minutes of Corbett Report Radio. So stay tuned right there. Radio. You're listening to James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and we have James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com holding on the line. And once again, thank you for joining us for tonight's episode. I hope that you got something out of it. And as always, the show notes will include the links to all of the things that we talked about tonight. So please look for that at CorbettReport.com/radio shortly after tonight's broadcast. So once again, James, thank you for joining us with the Food World Order information. And while we have you on, why don't we talk a little bit about what's coming up on Media Monarchy this Friday?
This Friday, of course, I've got a bit of, you know, Christmas-related bits and even, you know, whether that's music and media and other things. But all the things in the Holy Hexes site that I run about religion and society, of course, we have the solstice and Hanukkah and all of these as we approach all our, you know, sort of religious events. And all the things going on in cyberspace war, whether that's the discovery of new planets or Taliban Twitter and all the other things going on in inner space and outer space. I also have ready to almost go my end of the year, what I call mixtapes, where, you know, again, I'm a college radio DJ from years past, and I like to put together mixtapes. I've got my favorite music of 2011 coming pretty soon. And all the other things that we cover on Media Monarchy that, again, I feel like kind of encompass just all the different almost kind of interests that I have that seem to synchromystically, as they would say, all sort of connect together.
It's the Real News Remixed, and as long as you play Mega Upload song again, I will I'll listen in because I love that song. Joking. But anyway, absolutely. And if, for people who don't know, again, you can listen to MediaMonarchy.com, the radio program. It's live on Friday mornings. I don't know what time it's live, because I never get to listen live here in Japan. Is it 9 a.m. Pacific?
It's 10 a.m. Pacific, and I provide the little timeanddate.com link to wherever people are in the world to see when that is. But I realize most of my listeners all come from the podcast after the fact, which, of course, the links and the subscription links, they'll always be at the top right of MediaMonarchy.com, where you can also always see the most recent New World Next Week video.
And speaking of which, let's pull the trigger and let's announce right here a special sneak preview for the listeners out there in Corbett Report Radio Land. Next week's New World Next Week is going to be the year-end episode, so we're going to be going over one story each that we thought was an important story that went underreported in 2011. So we're each going to choose one. We're not going to tell each other what it is beforehand, so it can be a fresh perspective on it. And then we're also going to choose one story that we think is going to be a big story in 2012 and talk about that. So it's going to be, I hope, an interesting little New Year wrap-up and look-forward episode.
I hope so, which, again, as we mentioned on the most recent episode, which was published today, just a couple of the things that we mentioned at the end of 2010, of course, ended up being rather important stories in this, I think, 2011. So hopefully we'll keep trying to live up to our name of not only New World Next Week, but hopefully New World Next Year.
New World Next Decade, maybe we can aim for that next time. but absolutely. Well, thank you for all of your help again today, and thank you for everything that you're doing at MediaMonarchy.com. Again, people, check it out if you haven't done so already. And on Corbett Report radio programming note, tomorrow night, obviously, we have Friday Night Highlights, where I'll be dipping into the archives. We're going to be talking about Canada versus the New World Order tomorrow night, so I have some highlights of conversations I've done in the past specifically about Canada. And also, next week will be a week off for me from Corbett Report Radio, so no new programs. We'll be rebroadcasting some old episodes. So please tune in if you haven't heard some of the earlier episodes of this broadcast. But thank you once again for your time tonight. Look forward to talking to you again tomorrow night. Until then, take care.